This little book of Ruth is a story with a big impact. It takes place, as the very first verse of Ruth chapter 1 tells us, during the time of the judges. And that's really about all we know about the time of the little book of Ruth, that it takes place during that time span. And in the book of Ruth, we're going to follow two streams of thought, two tracks we're going to take. First, we're going to look at the story of Ruth and Naomi. That's on the face of it. This wonderful story of these women. It's a story of real tragedy on one side. It's a story of real personal trial. But it's also a story of renewal and restoration. And there's a sense in which it reminds us of the story of Job, of the trials that Job went through. But in the end, the great blessing which Job experienced at the hand of God. And so it's a story of tragedy which is turned into blessing. But secondly, it is the story of redemption. And in Ruth chapter 2, if you look there, in Ruth chapter 2 and verse 12, there is a key verse. In Ruth 2, verse 12, there is a key verse. May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. It's the story of a woman who seeks the refuge which can only be found at the hand of the Almighty, Jehovah, the true and living God. It's a story of seeking redemption. And there are parallels concerning Christ. It's the story of finding redemption and having that redemption applied. And we're going to see how that is pictured and portrayed in this wonderful little book of Ruth. But the key verse again is that verse in chapter 2, verse 12. May the Lord reward your work and your wages be full from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to seek refuge. Well, we'll be following these two tracks as we deal with the little book of Ruth. The first five verses in Ruth chapter 1 give us the introduction to the book and the background to the book. And I want us just to work through it tonight, that first chapter. Now it came about in the days when the judges governed that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the land of Moab with his wife and his two sons. And the name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the names of his two sons were Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem in Judah. Now they entered the land of Moab and remained there. As I said, the time is the time of the judges. There is famine in the land, which is not unusual for Judah. That's not unusual, but I think one of the unusual things here is the fact that there's no mention of sin. In the book of Judges, we have rehearsed time and time again that the people of God followed the Lord, and then they backed off, and God brought judgment for their sin, and then they repented, and they turned back to the Lord, and after a time, they settled into idol worship, and the cycle was repeated. We don't see that. All we know is during this time, and there is a famine in the land, and there is nothing said about sin, and I think that's important because the tragedy which is rehearsed for us, and it's real tragedy, and I think we have to really sense that, is not tied directly to personal sin in any fashion. It comes about, I think, because these people, as we do, live in a fallen world. The place is Bethlehem in Judah. That is specifically mentioned. It's in Judah because there were other cities by the name of Bethlehem. This Bethlehem is south of Jerusalem. The name means the house of bread, and it is the birthplace of the bread from heaven, Jesus Christ. And we begin the story, it seems to me, with a hopeful young couple. an eager young couple anticipating the life which is ahead of them. Elimelech is the head of this little household, and his name literally means, God is my king. And there is probably, therefore, no doubt that this is a devout man, someone who loves his Lord. That's reflected in his name. The Lord, or God, is my king. And this young woman he takes to be his wife is called Naomi. You know what the name Naomi means? Pleasant. Pleasant. A pleasant lady. A wonderful lady. A loving woman. But after this marriage, this hopeful young family begins to experience tragedy. They have two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. Strange names. But the name Mahlon means weak or sick. And that's probably exactly the kind of child he was. A weak and sickly son. And Chilion, a failing, pining young man. That's the name. Failing, pining. Interesting. And that's probably a reflection again of these two young men. They were probably sickly children, much loved by their parents. But as a result of their being sickly, also bringing, because of that, much heartache to the family. And then you can imagine this hopeful young family getting started in life, these children coming along and needing a lot of attention. There's famine in the land. It would be like in our society today, bad economic times. Serious economic times. A depression, if you will. Tough times. And so what does this young family do? It decides to move. There's little else it can do. It decides to move, and it moves to the land of Moab to find better employment, to find better times, to get out of the area of this famine and this economically depressed area. And they go to Moab, which is on the other side of the Salt Sea, the Dead Sea, where times are better. Just to the east of the Dead Sea, they travel. And when they get into Moab, we discover in verses 3 through 5 that the tough times don't stop for them. Then Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died. And she was left with her two sons. And they took for themselves Moabite women as wives. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. And they lived there about 10 years. Then both Mahlon and Chilion also died. And the woman was bereft of her two children and her husband. You can begin to sense what's happening. Here is this young family, and they go into Moab, and Elimelech dies. We're not given any reason for this. We don't know what the cause of death is, but he's taken from this life. It's a tragedy. And here's this mother then raising these two youngsters, and when they come of age, then they take for themselves wives from among the Moabite women, and there's a glimmer of hope in this little family then. There's a couple of weddings, and there's a great joy that takes place, and you can sense a little of uplifting and reviving of this little family. Better times are ahead. But these two sons are weak of stature and of health, and the scriptures tell us then that both Mahlon and Chilion died also. And there then are three women left in poverty. And that's the real situation in which they find themselves. And so what do they decide to do? It's back to Bethlehem. Naomi, hearing that there are better times now back in Bethlehem, and a period of 10 years has passed now. 10 years has gone by, and all of this has taken place. And so Naomi says, well, better go back to Bethlehem, back home. Things are better there now. And this is exactly what takes place. Verse 6. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law, that she might return from the land of Moab, for she had heard in the land of Moab that the Lord had visited his people in giving them food. Verse 7. So she departed from the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. And this is where we find these three women. Now, they're on the road, on the dusty road back to Bethlehem. And I encourage you to catch the scene now as these three women are trudging back together on the dusty road to Judah. And Naomi begins to attempt to persuade the daughters-in-law to go back. Verse 8, and Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, go, return each of you to her mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. Go back, will you? There's no sense in coming with me now. Look at what we've gone through. Go back to your own families. Go back to your own country. You can find husbands there. Start a new life there for yourselves. May the Lord, and catch these words, may the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. And we begin to pick up a part of the theme of redemption here. The words translated deal kindly have to do with the covenant love of God, the loving kindness of God. In the Psalms, this word is often translated, loving kindness, and it has to do with the covenant love of God, where people are in covenant with God and they experience the kindness of the Lord. And so Naomi says, may the Lord deal kindly with you. Go back. Verse 9 says, may the Lord grant you that you may find rest, each in the house of her husband. Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voices and wept. Here they are on the road. And you can imagine somebody off in the distance watching these three women talk together. And again, Naomi is saying to the two women, may the Lord grant you to find rest. And there's the theme of redemption again. You remember when we talked about the Sabbath rest from the book of Hebrews, how we live in a sinful world and much comes upon us in our lives because we do live in a sinful world. It's not because of a direct result necessarily of sin in which we find ourselves, but it's because we live in a sinful, fallen world that so much does take place. And we need rest from all of that. And Naomi is saying, may the Lord grant you that you may find rest. And what does she do? She kisses these two daughters-in-law. She takes the initiative here, kisses them. Say, go on your way. I'm going back to Judah. And they no, they say, verse 10. And they said to her, no, but we will surely return to you and to your people. But Naomi said, return, my daughters. Why should you go with me? Have I yet sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Return, my daughters. Go, for I am too old to have a husband. And if I said I have hope, if I should even have a husband tonight and also bear sons, would you therefore wait until they were grown? Would you therefore refrain from marrying? No, my daughters. You see a little bit of change here. It's not the daughters-in-law anymore. It's the daughters. No, my daughters. For it is harder for me than for you, for the hand of the Lord has gone forth against me. And here she is saying, look, you're young, you can marry again, you can find a husband, each of you. Go back. I'm not going to have that privilege again. I'm older now. I'm not going to marry again. I'm not going to have children again. But you can. Go head back. That's the argument that she uses. And then in verse 13, She really tries to drive it home. She says in verse 13, "No, my daughters, for it is harder for me than for you." See, I'm in a tougher position than you are because I am older. And you can have a go at it again with life. And I'm not in that position. And then she adds these awesome words, really. "For the hand of the Lord has gone forth against me." There we have it. The hand of the Lord has gone forth against me. You want to follow with me? And the hand of the Lord has gone forth against me. And she doesn't try and tone it down. I think sometimes we try and tone down the providence of God by saying, "The Lord permitted this," or "The Lord allowed this." No, Naomi didn't say that. It's direct and pointed. "The Lord," she says, "for the hand of Jehovah," is what she's saying, "has gone forth against me." And sometimes the providences of God are hard. You know, you think of Aaron Clausen. The providences of God sometimes are hard. You need to pray for people like that. And they're thinking, "The hand of the Lord has gone forth against me." And that's exactly what Naomi is saying here, not toning it down at all. And notice what happens then. "And they lifted up their voices and wept again." What a scene on this road on the way to Bethlehem. "And they lifted up their voices and wept again. And Orpah," this time, "kissed her mother-in-law." Before it was Naomi kissed the two other women and said, "Go on your way. I'm going back to Bethlehem." This time, Orpah kisses Naomi, and she goes. And it says, Ruth clung to her. We shouldn't think disparagingly about Orpah. I don't think we should. And the commentators that I read on this said we shouldn't think disparagingly of Orpah. She was persuaded by her mother-in-law that she should go back to her native land, but Ruth clung to her. And then we have the wonderful section of the devotion of Ruth to Naomi in the next verses. "Then she said, 'Behold, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and her gods. Return after your sister-in-law.'" She's gone back to her people. She's gone back to her gods. Notice how it's placed now. Notice how it's said. "But Ruth said, 'Do not urge me. Do not urge me to leave you or turn back from following you. For where you go, I will go. And where you lodge, I will lodge. And your people shall be my people. And your God, my God.'" Here's a complete dedication of Ruth to leave her family, her kindred, her people, and the God that is worshipped among her family, her kindred, and her people, to say, "Your people are my people. Your God, Jehovah, is my God." And Ruth swears an oath by Jehovah that this will be the case. Verse 17, "Where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. Thus may the Lord do to me and worse, if anything, but death parts you and me." Swearing by Jehovah. And one of the commentators says that she may have done this with her hand on her throat. "May the Lord do to me and more also, if anything but death part you and me." She's convinced and swearing this oath by Jehovah. She commits herself to be with Naomi. And this is an amazing thing. I really think it is. When you consider all of the circumstances. Because here's a woman who has gone through not a little bit of turmoil and tragedy. Her father-in-law has been taken. Her husband has been taken. They've lived through famine, for years of famine, no doubt in poverty. And Naomi's testimony is in verse 13, "The hand of Jehovah has gone out against me." And what is Ruth's response to all of that? "Your people are my people. Your God is my God." That's Ruth's response to all of those circumstances, all of those providential dealings. And I think the bottom line is this, that there is no other real possibility of redemption. There really isn't. Where else is one to go but to the living God? There's no possibility of redemption outside of Him. There is no possibility of redemption outside of being associated with the people of God. Isn't that right? Don't you have to be joined together and united with the people of God? Don't you have to be a part of the body of Christ? Don't you have to be united with Jesus Christ in order to experience redemption? There's no such thing as being outside of the body of Christ and really experiencing redemption. You have to be united with the people of God in the deepest spiritual sense of the word in order to experience. Where are you going to find rest? Naomi says, "May the Lord grant you that you may find rest." Where are you going to find rest? Outside of Jehovah, through Jesus Christ. You're not going to. Where are you going to find covenant love outside of this God? You're not. You know, it's interesting because when Naomi says in verse 13, "For the hand of the Lord has gone forth against me," the reaction of many people is, "I can't believe in a God like that. And I'm not going to believe in a God like that." But not Naomi, or not Ruth, I should say. Not Ruth. Look at her reaction again. "Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. Thus may the Lord do to me and worse, if anything but death parts you and me." And then verse 18 gives us Naomi's reaction. "When she saw that she was determined to go with her, she said no more." When the oath had been sworn by Ruth, there was nothing else Naomi could say. And the two proceed then back to Bethlehem. The end of the chapter then gives us their return. "So they both went until they came to Bethlehem. And it came about when they had come to Bethlehem that all the city was stirred because of them. And the women said, 'Is this Naomi?' The years must have been hard on Naomi. Because the question is asked, 'Is this Naomi? Is this the Naomi we knew?' And it was. And Naomi says, 'Do not call me Naomi. Call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me.'" Now, I want you to see something here. Here again is the forthright declaration of Naomi concerning the providences of God. There's no watering down. In fact, it's even stronger than we find in verse 13. "For the Almighty," that is, the Almighty God, "has dealt very bitterly with me." And the word Mara, the name Mara, means bitter. Now, we have to catch something else here. There is a distinct difference between God's dealing, which to us may seem hard, and the content of Naomi's heart. because I don't think Naomi is bitter at all. And I think that's one of the wonderful parts of this story. She's not bitter. She recognizes the hard providence of God, but she's not bitter about it. There have been hard circumstances. And people can get bitter about hard circumstances. And we ought not to get bitter about hard circumstances. I don't think Naomi is bitter. The name Mara refers to the activity of God, what He has done, not to the content of her heart. And there's a big difference. And I hope you catch that. I think it's really important for us to catch that aspect of things. And she said to them, "Do not call me Naomi, but call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full." Verse 21 tells us the circumstance. "I went out full, but the Lord has brought me back empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has witnessed against me and the Almighty has afflicted me?" So Naomi returned. Verse 22 is kind of a summary here. "So Naomi returned, and with her Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, who returned from the land of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest." And my friends, here are two women now who are in the hands of the Almighty. They recognize they are in the hands of the Almighty. And here is the place of redemption. Here is the place of finding rest. To me, that's the wonder of this story. Because even in the difficult circumstances of life, when we recognize the hand of God, we can say, here is the place of rest. Here is the place where we can find rest. Here is the place where we can find redemption. And I think that's what this story is about. And when we come contemplating the Lord's Supper, what should we think of? When we think of Jesus Christ portrayed for us in the Lord's Supper, we should think at least these two things. Here is the place where we find redemption. Here is the place where we find rest. There's not a one of us in this room that hasn't had some turmoil in this life. Not a one of us. Sometimes the providences of God are hard. And we can say with Naomi, "The hand of the Lord has gone forth against me." But we need not be bitter about it. We may graciously accept the providences of God and realize that in His hands we find redemption. In His hands, in the end, we find rest. And that's exactly what happens in this story.